Why do we put such an emphasis on Jesus? I'll give you two quick reasons. He's the perfect example of, one, humanity. Jesus showed what humanity is at its best. If you want to know, oh, how do you do this thing called human life? Jesus did it. He aced it. He had it down, the way he loved people, the way he reacted to people, the way he interacted with people. Jesus was the perfect example of what it is to be a human. And so we want to be able to follow that kind of example. Here's the other crazy thing. Jesus was the perfect example of what God was like. Whereas this, okay, there's this being called God that we can't see, can't touch. What do we do with that? And we're told in the Bible that Jesus is the image, the representation of the invisible God. What we couldn't see, Jesus showed us. He showed us the character of God and the way he lived. Well, this leads us to another thing. Okay, so if he's the perfect picture of humanity and the perfect picture of deity, then here's the awesome thing. We as humans were made in the image of God. We were made to show his character. And so we want to be like Jesus because we want to show God's character. That doesn't mean we'll replace God or that we'll not need him anymore. No, we have this relationship that is entirely important. And in that relationship, through the power of the Holy Spirit, we become more and more like Jesus. That's the short of why Jesus is what we put first, last, and everywhere in between in this church. So in an attempt to keeping that in front of our minds and in front of our eyes, we've had this thing this year called the Jesus Life Challenge, where we're asking people to do four things. We have four more months left of 2014, and in the Bible there are four biographies of Jesus. They're called Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They're written by those guys. And so in these next 4 months, I'm challenging you to read all four. Pretty much one a month, right? Easy enough. Listen to the sermons that we're going to have from here on out. But that's getting it in. The more important part is getting it out. Number one, speak what you're learning. Talk to people, whether it's your mom and dad that you Skype with, whether it's a student that you're next to, whether it's someone who works next to you, that you're talking about what you're learning. And then the fourth one, each week we try to give you a practical step, something to do. Jesus did this, so let's do this. And then find those practical steps and do it. There's the short rundown. Today what we're looking at is that Jesus touched outcasts. I'm going to take a slight survey with you all. Let's pretend for a moment that there's this big scale of people and there's really, really good people, really, really bad people. I'm not saying the scale exists, but let's pretend like there is such a scale. Think in your mind of one person that you go like, oh, who's really good? Who's best example of a person? Get a person in your brain. How many of you picked Mother Teresa? Raise your hand if you thought, who's a great person? Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa was this nun who went to live in India among lepers and outcasts and gave her life without becoming rich. Simply, the whole point was she could serve people. And so many people think, wow, this is a really good thing. Today we're talking about Jesus touched outcasts. Here's the thing. I don't think I need to, in some way, try to prove to you that this is a good idea. Most of us would go, yeah, that's really good. I honor people who do that. That's wonderful. So I don't need to prove to you that it's a great idea. The question is, will you be the type of person who actually does it? Will you be the one who, when you have that sort of uncomfortable situation come up to you, chooses not to ignore that person or walk by or push them away? Something to think about as we go. Jesus goes around healing people. In Luke chapter 4, verse 40, we're told that all these people who are sick are coming to Jesus, all kinds of diseases, and he lays his hands on them and is healing every one of them. People like being around Jesus. He's touching them. They're being healed. This seems like a great thing. And I want to single out one story that we have in the Bible of Jesus touching a guy and the effect that that makes. In Mark chapter 1, we're told that a leper came to Jesus begging on his knees, if you want to, you can cleanse me. So apparently, this guy who is a leper realizes that Jesus has something. He's been healing people. He's been touching them. They're getting healed. And he goes, if there's someone that can fix this, if there's someone that can put this right, it's Jesus. Leprosy, in the Bible, it can be leprosy as we understand it today. It applied actually to a lot of skin diseases because They just had the word leprosy. So it went to a lot of things. We're not sure if he had simply just leprosy or not. But a man who is ritually unclean, has a physical skin problem, and says, Jesus, I need you to fix this because you're the one who can fix this. There's some backstory to this, or to this kind of situation that this guy had. So I want to look at that in the Old Testament really quick. Some of the things that happened to people who had this. In Numbers chapter 5, God is giving his law to Moses, and he said, command the people of Israel to ban from the camp anyone who had an infectious skin disease, such as leprosy. Also anyone who has a discharge, and anyone who is ritually unclean from contact with the dead body. Keep the dead body thing in the back of your mind. But you're supposed to kick out of the camp people who have a skin disease or who have a dead body. Because at the time, they're living all together. There's like a million people or so that are all wandering through the desert, and you don't want to have a communicable disease that spreads out and kills everybody. So if you have something that might cause danger to everybody, you're kind of quarantined outside the camp. In Leviticus 13, we see a similar thing, except it explains a little more of what someone with an infectious skin disease would do. Was if someone has a leprous disease, you have to go around with torn clothes, your hair has to be crazy, which, you know, nowadays that's the cool thing anyway, and cover his upper lip and cry out, unclean, unclean, and you remain unclean as long as you have the disease, and so then you have to live alone. You have to live outside the camp, you can't touch anybody, no hugs, until it's fixed, which sometimes it goes away, sometimes it doesn't go away, and you don't know how long. And then on top of it, once it had gone away, you had to go show yourself to the high priest. And if he says, okay, yeah, it all looks good, but you have to wait 7 more days where you're able to live inside the camp, but you have to live outside of your house, outside of your tent, 7 more days. You go back to the priest again. He looks at it and says, yes, we're sure it's gone and it's not coming back. You're good. You can go into your house. So this sort of a thing would be horrible for me. Anytime that this happens to you, you have to go outside of the camp. It doesn't matter if you are a business person who's just about to make a big deal, and then, oh, I find out that I have the skin disease. Sorry, life gets put on hold. If you just got married, and then you get some kind of rash, sorry, life gets put on hold, and you have to be outside. Things like, there's so many ways where this would be incredibly inconvenient. Not just inconvenient, but isolating. It pulls you away. And at the time, a lot of people assumed if you have a skin disease, especially like this, you must have been a bad person. Because in the Old Testament, we have several examples of people who had this kind of disease, and it typically happened after they did something bad. So people just equated, oh, you have this, you must be a bad person, whether it was true or not. And so you have this shameful disease, this thing that keeps you away from people. I get it, why the man runs up to Jesus and says, look, if you're willing, you can make me clean. I need some help here. So what does Jesus do? Deeply moved, Jesus put out his hand, touched him, and said, I want to be clean. And then and there, the leprosy was gone, his skin smooth and healthy. Jesus takes this man who, he's unclean, so if Jesus touches him, Jesus would be unclean, would be the mentality. It's like, you don't touch these people. And Jesus says, I'm not worried about that. I'm going to heal this man. And so he touches a man who is an outcast, who had been pushed away from the rest of society. On top of it, it's meant a lot to the people then, because this was a miracle that they didn't think could happen unless it was the Messiah doing it. Because again, there's this idea of you're sinful, you're shameful. And so to be able to heal the leprous person, you had to be able to heal their sinfulness as well, was the thought people had. So they went, the only person who will be able to do this is the Messiah. Guess who's doing it? Jesus. Here's the thing. Jesus is able to cleanse you physically and spiritually. As we talked about a few weeks ago, we don't divorce the spiritual body and the physical body and say that one or the other is not important. They both are, and Jesus came to bring wholeness in both parts of us. But the story isn't done there. Because the healing was instant didn't mean that it was an instant adaptation back to society. Remember, I said, if you're healed, you have to go to the priest, show yourself, and then there's still the 7 more days to prove, yes, you are still clean. And so Jesus looks at the man and tells him, okay, strict orders, Say nothing to anyone. Just take the offering for cleansing that Moses prescribed and present yourself to the priest. This will validate your healing to the people. But when he went out and began to proclaim it freely and to spread the word, so that Jesus was no longer able to move freely in and out of the city, but stayed out in the country, and people found him and came from all over. This is the part of the story that struck me this week. It was strange to me. So, number one, Jesus is saying, yes, I've healed you. Jesus knows the man is fully healed, but says, still go through the process of adapting back into society. Yes, go to the priest, show that, do this, make sure that everyone sees and knows this is the real thing. But he says, don't go off and tell everybody. Probably because Jesus realizes if he goes off and tells everybody, then he's going to be swamped by people, and instead of being able to give one-on-one personal interaction like Jesus wanted to, he's just going to have crowds and crowds around him. And that keeps him from having some of that personal touch. That's why I think Jesus says this. So he's just healed a man who's an outcast. Tells the guy, look, here's the one thing I'm telling you to do. Don't go off and tell everybody. Just go to the priest, do your thing. And what's the guy do? He goes off and tells everybody. Here's something to really know in your life. There are times when you go, oh, I want to help this person. They may be an outcast. And you try to do something to be involved in their life. And it seems like something really good happens, like a healing. Even then, there can be unintended consequences that make your life more difficult from doing something good. That's what happens with Jesus here. Jesus does the right thing. He heals the man. He cares about him. And even still, by doing that, it ends up causing Jesus more difficulty to be able to go in and out of cities like he wants to. We don't hear Jesus complain, I never should have healed that guy. I take it all back. It didn't work out as well as I would have wanted it to. Sometimes helping people does lead to other consequences. You know what? It's worth it. Just know that it will happen. But don't give up on people. And also, it's interesting to me that Jesus says, okay, you don't have to go off and tell everybody. Because we live in a day and age where there's Facebook, Twitter, whatever. The idea is we get information out as quickly as possible to as many people as possible. The greatest joy someone has is when their video goes viral. And like, yay, it's so great. I've got up to 1,000 likes. We have this like publicity-minded mentality because we live in an advertising consumerist culture. But Jesus isn't concerned about getting advertising and publicity. He says this isn't the right time for it. It's always the right time to show love to someone, like Jesus does. But know that it's not always the right time to publicize stuff. For what it's worth, for what that'll mean to you. But do know that. Jesus had this, I'm here to love and to change someone's life. And it was the perfect time to do it. He didn't say, come back to me tomorrow. But it wasn't always the right time to publicize things. And yet, even still after this, Jesus heals a man, gives him one directive. The guy doesn't do it. Tons of people are around him. And Jesus doesn't say, forget it, I'm not healing any more of you because this doesn't work out well. No, Jesus continues to heal despite the fact that he had some unintended consequences from another man's action that he helped. But something that was cool, another just quick story of a guy being helped. In Mark chapter 8, there's a man who's blind and he's deaf, and he comes up and is talking to Jesus, apparently in a city, and we're told that Jesus takes him by the hand and walks him out of the city and then heals him out there. Jesus likes to get one-on-one with people. Jesus likes to have a personal touch when he can. And I think the same is in your life. Maybe you feel like you're just lost in a crowd. Jesus likes to come and take people by the hand and then get them in a place where he can just talk with them one-on-one. So we see Jesus touched outcasts. That's great. So what about us? Who are we supposed to touch? Who are we supposed to help? I think there's another good story in the Bible that Jesus helps us know how we're supposed to think about this. Story of the Good Samaritan. Many people have heard that term, at least. The Good Samaritan, right? Hopefully this will help you think about it in a little different way. So this man walks up to Jesus and says, Jesus, what good thing must I do to inherit eternal life? Now, let's start with, this is a flawed question. Why? How do you get an inheritance? You get an inheritance because you're given it as a gift, typically through a family member or a friend. You don't have to do some good thing to get an inheritance. Inheritance comes through relationship. If you want to inherit eternal life, let's tell you right here, it's not about you doing enough good things. It comes through relationship with Jesus and with the Heavenly Father. And that eternal life is an inheritance through relationship, not through your actions, just so you get it. But Jesus responds to this guy slightly differently. The man says, "What good thing must I do?" And Jesus says, "Well, you know the important parts of the law. Love God with all your heart. Love your neighbor as yourself." The guy's like, "Okay. Well, let's see if we can get a little further." So he asks him, "Well, who is my neighbor? Because I want to figure out who really am I supposed to be loving here." Pastors, priests, I'm sure get this kind of question all the time. It's, explain to me a little more detailed what exactly I'm supposed to do. That way I only have to do what you say. And if there's anything on top of that, I don't have to do it because the pastor didn't tell me to. That's what this guy seems to be doing with Jesus. Well, who is my neighbor? Because once you explain to me my neighbor, then I only have to love that person and not others. So Jesus says, here's a story. There's a man who is walking along and he's going to Jericho. While he's on the way, robbers come, they beat him, strip him, leave him half dead on the side of the road, take all the stuff with him. So then there was a priest who comes by. Now, some background on this, because the people who are listening to this story, they're able to kind of piece together more of what this looks like. When they hear a priest, what do they think? They think someone who's rich. Priest is probably traveling, not just by foot, but he'll have horses, donkeys, whatever, but he's traveling, he's got some stuff with him. Also, he's traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho. Their understanding of the time would also be this. A lot of priests did live in Jericho, and since there are too many priests to always be working in the temple, you had like a 2-week shift. So imagine this. The priest has just been on a business trip for 2 weeks to Jerusalem because he's supposed to serve in the temple. That's what he does for that 2 weeks. And then now he's heading back to Jericho, which was likely his home. This is what people are seeing in their minds, okay? Guy has just been working and he's traveling back. Rich priest is going along the way. So he's been doing his religious duty. He's just leaving church. He's finally headed home after being gone for a few weeks. And he comes upon this man who's lying on the side of the road. What do you do? Well, here's some things that the guy has to start thinking about. If it's a Jewish person, he has to help this man. But if he's not a Jewish person, he might not need to help this man. It is his mentality. Because it's his kin. Well, how do you find out? Unfortunately, the man is unconscious, so you can't ask him. He's naked, so you can't tell by his clothes. And even though, yes, he probably would have been circumcised, Samaritans were circumcised and Egyptians were sometimes circumcised at the time as well. So there's really no good way for him to tell exactly where this man is from. This is a problem. Also, the man's unconscious, so he doesn't know how well this guy is doing. Remember I told you earlier, keep in your mind, the people that had to be excluded from the camp were either A, you had an infectious disease, or if you had touched a dead body. This man has been left for dead. He's not sure if the man is dead. So if the priest goes up and touches this man, and the man is dead, then the priest automatically becomes unclean for 7 days. So he has to turn around, go back to Jerusalem. That way he can present himself to one of the other priests, say, touch this dead guy, have to wait here for 7 days. On top of it, if you're a priest that was working in the temple, part of your pay is that people bring the sacrifices. So if you have a nice rack of lamb or cow or whatever, he had some good meat with him. And then some of that meat gets burned to God, but you get to keep some of it. That's sort of your pay. So this man is probably heading home with some of the best meat that he ever gets. I mean, this is the good stuff. You have to have the perfect animal to be sacrificed to God, and then he gets a portion of it. If he touches this man and this man is dead, not only is he unclean, he doesn't get to eat any of that meat. His family doesn't get to eat any of that meat. His servants don't get to eat any of that meat. Everything he has becomes unclean, and it becomes a big headache for the next week. Now, maybe the man isn't dead, but if he starts to help the man and the man dies, because he's going in that direction anyway, if he's not there already, then on top of having all the problems of touching a dead person, he also is required to tear his robes as a sign of mourning. So he has to rip up some of his best outfit. All because this guy might be one of his native countrymen, but maybe the guy isn't. Do I help the guy who might already be dead, so I'm not doing him any help anyway, and go through all of this trouble? Or I've been doing my time. I've just served God for the last 2 weeks, and now it's my time to get to go home, and I have to think about my family, their food, and all of this. And so he goes by. How often do we do that kind of a thing? I've already done my God stuff for the day. I have to head home. Oh, if I stop to give them time, there's the kids at home waiting, and I need to make sure I do this other stuff first. Jesus' story continues. There's a Levite who comes along, which would have been a guy who would have served underneath this priest or been helping him. Now, for him, the decision is much simpler. Because if he knows priest has just gone by, and then he comes up to this guy, he goes, well, the priest probably had a good reason for it, right? Am I supposed to think I understand this better than he does? No. And if I help him, then that kind of makes the priest look bad that he didn't help him, or that I'm trying to say that I knew what he was instead of he did. So for the Levite, this is simple. Priest didn't help him. I don't think I should help him either. So the Levite goes on by. And then another man comes up. He's a Samaritan, which at that time, there were two cultures that did not like each other. Jews, Samaritans didn't get along well. And so Jesus is putting into his story a man that he knows his listeners will not like. Automatically, they just hear the name and go, ugh. And Jesus says, that's the guy who comes up, helps him, dresses his wounds, makes sure he's okay, puts him on his donkey, takes him to the town, puts him in an inn, gives the money and says, take care of whatever you have to. And then Jesus looks back at this man he's been talking to and says, which one do you think was the neighbor? The guy won't even bring himself to say the Samaritan because he doesn't want to say that name. So he just says, well, the man who helped him. Yeah. Go and do likewise. See, this man's question was, who is my neighbor? Who can I kind of block out from being my neighbor? And Jesus widens it. And more says, who is there in need? Make them your neighbor. Don't try to find reasons to exclude people from serving them. Find reasons to serve. Last year, we took 10 people. We went to Kenya. Most of them had never been there before. And the first day we get there, we get settled in. The second day, in the morning, we start by going to a garbage dump. I kind of figured that might be later in the trip after people have got accustomed, but this is, no, we're just throwing you in right away. We go to a garbage dump where people live next to vultures and pigs. I'd been there before the previous year, so I kind of knew what to expect and tried to prepare the other people for what was going to come. But as we're driving in, even though I tried to prepare myself for it, I truly felt the need to throw up. It's just one of those, you smell it and you're like, I need to get out of this car and walk around because if I sit here too long, this isn't going to be good. That kind of a situation. And we walk up and the 10 of us are just kind of standing there and they've pulled together these little children. You have 2-year-olds that just sit and play in the garbage dump of the city. You have 40, 50-year-olds who have been around there for a long time. You have everything. And they're kind of sitting there looking at us like, okay, what happens now? You guys are here. And yes, it's emotionally affecting people on the team. I can see, like, you don't want to cry right in front of them to go, your circumstances are horrible, but it stinks, it's dirty, this is not a way for anyone to live. And so we give this short talk, and then there's the food time afterward, but there's only one or two people that can be serving the food just because we only have one or two buckets. And what was so beautiful for me to see is when finally some of the people in the group, one goes, then two goes, and they start walking amongst, and they get in the middle, and they have four or five kids around them, and they just start talking to them for as much as we could talk, or playing like the hand game, or holding them on their lap while these kids are eating, or swinging them around. And then people start singing, and then there's clapping, and then it just becomes this dance party in the middle of a garbage dump, where we and they are just dancing together, singing praise songs in a language that isn't our own. And it was the best moment that we could have for the beginning of the trip. They walked in, and this team starts loving people and sees past the junk and the grime, sees past the horribleness of the situation, and is just loving people, and joy comes in that. And there was a moment that I stepped back, and I'm just taking it in, I'm watching them, and I'm glad, joyful, proud. There's a pastor that we work with, Pastor Ken, an incredible guy there, a local who works with these people and loves them with his heart and keeps going back there. But then we had another pastor who'd come along with us that I don't think he'd ever been there before. And yeah, so he walks up to me as I'm standing watching this. He hasn't taken part in any of this. He's just been kind of keeping back to the sidelines, not getting too close to people. And so when he sees that I'm far enough away and he knows that I'm the white pastor, he walks up to me and says, "These people really need our prayer." And maybe he's a good guy, but in my head, I got so frustrated. I'm like, are you serious? Yes, they need prayer. But they need someone to actually walk up to them and love them, and that's what's happening right in front of you. But you think because you're a pastor or because of whatever that you're too good for that? Or you're going to walk up to me and say the spiritual thing that's going to make me be happy with you and want to throw money your way? But this is the thought that's going through my head. I'm like, how can you be so over-spiritual that you don't realize that what's spiritual right now is to actually love people and to touch the outcasts? And yet, it breaks my heart because I think of myself, and I know that I do that. I know that I have those moments of, I'll be praying for that person. I know I have those moments where it seems more religious to do this other thing, and so I bypass people. I think a lot of us do that, where we find our reasons, we find our good excuses to try to make ourselves look good or to try to win somebody else's favor, but not really love the person who may not be able to do a single thing for you. But here's the question. Are you willing to serve no matter what you get out of it? Are you willing to love no matter what you get out of it? And whether people have a mental issue, drug problem, poor, dirty, diseased, those moments where you see love bringing something beautiful is incredible. And so often the places where you see that most is when we're serving those who we would feel uncomfortable to serve. Those are sometimes the greatest moments of my life that I've seen, is when I decided, you know what, forget my comfort, let's try something. Let's just follow where Jesus leads. This goes back to something Jesus said. There's this time he's talking to people and he said, at the end of time, people are going to be split up. There's going to be like sheep and goats. He's making an analogy. And he says, he's going to say to one of them, I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was homeless and you gave me a room. I was shivering and you gave me clothes. I was sick and you stopped to visit. I was in prison and you came to me. And these people are going to ask, wait, when did we do that? I don't remember seeing you. You didn't look like you look on the fancy Jesus movie with your blonde hair and blue eyes. And he's going to say, I'm telling you the solemn truth. Whenever you did one of these things to someone overlooked or ignored, that was me. You did it to me. And then he's going to say to these other people the exact opposite. I was hungry and you gave me no meal. I was thirsty, you gave me no drink. I was homeless, you gave me no bed. I was shivering, you gave me no clothes, sick and in prison, and you never visited me. And I'm telling you the solemn truth, whenever you failed to do one of these things to someone who is being overlooked or ignored, that was me. You failed to do it to me. And he's saying to the one side, enter into my happiness. Come be a part of joy. And to the others, he says, I'm really not happy with the fact that you have overlooked, ignored, and avoided people. So the thing that I would like you to take with you and remember, that whatever you did for one of Jesus' brothers or sister, no matter how unimportant they seemed, you did it for him. That should be our focus. That should be something that we keep our eyes on, is where can we find people who may be stinky, dirty, uncomfortable, imperfect, and they're there for us to serve. Are you willing to serve no matter what the outcome is? Because sometimes even what seems like a good outcome will later lead to unintended consequences. Are you willing to serve no matter what? Here's your Jesus life step if you're willing to do it. Don't avoid or refuse to help someone who approaches you in an uncomfortable situation. It's interesting. Jesus says in Luke, blessed are the poor. So often, we're trying to look for blessing in other places. Well, why don't we go where the blessed people are and just start being around them, and maybe their blessing will rub off on you. Let's pray.